Part 25, The Wolf. Chapter 48. He had arrived in Bina in the late afternoon, as long shadows of the pines had begun to stretch across the road. He'd stopped at a place called the Big Winnie Resort and General Store and asked for directions to the Morisot home. He'd parked in front of a tidy little house, mounted the porch steps, and stood in the gold light of the descending sun. When the door opened to his knock, he said to the woman who answered,
"Bonjour, I need your help,"
and he told her his name. Her face had been hard and her eyes full of suspicion as she scrutinized this stranger at her door. Then, as if she had seen something in him that put her doubt to rest, she softened and her eyes changed. Her husband called out from somewhere behind her.
"Who is it?"
she replied.
"He says his name is Prophet."
Now, as Leloup crosses into Canada, he reckons he's less than an hour behind the Morisots, the O'Connors, and Tanya Baptiste. He has directions to both the house on the island and the cabin on Fox Creek, along with a hand-drawn map given to him by Vernon Morisot. Morisot had tried to insist that he go too, but Leloup told him it was best he stay with Minnie.
"These people are the kind that will find and torture a family if it will get them what they want. God willing, they still don't have that. You need to remain here. And until you hear from me or your children, don't open your door to anyone you don't know. You have a rifle?"
"For deer hunting," Morisot had replied.
"Keep it handy and loaded."
Although the road north is serpentine, Leloup keeps the SUV he's taken from Frederick's in Aurora well over the speed limit, trying to cut the distance between him and the others. Cut, too, the distance between him and Kimball, because the man is a jackal and won't stop until he's sunk his teeth into his prey. Kimball will have help. His team in Minnesota has been decimated, but Kimball has others at his beck and call. The people backing him have armies. As he speeds along, Leloup thinks about his first meeting with Kimball. They were both in the Canadian military, posted in Kandahar, Afghanistan. Leloup was halfway into his tour of duty when he was summoned to Kimball's office. The interview lasted 1 minute.
"You have a knack for tracking," Kimball said.
"True?" Leloup was surprised that a man of Kimball's rank would know about the ability of one of his very junior officers.
"True, sir."
"How?"
"I left school at 16 and spent the next 3 years in the Northwest Territories learning to hunt, sir."
"Hunt what?"
"Mostly big game, sir. Deer, bear, moose, caribou, musk ox."
"No wolves?"
"I'm Wolf Clan, sir. I don't hunt my brothers."
"But you've hunted humans, I've been told."
"I sometimes helped out the RCMP."
"Because you had a reputation."
"Word got around, sir."
"Word has got around here, too. I'm creating a special unit to track and kill targeted Taliban fighters who fled into the mountains. I need people who can follow them, regardless of the terrain. Can you do that?"
"I can, sir."
And he did, until his tour of duty ended. Then came his second meeting with Kimball. He was working as a hunting guide for a wilderness operation out of a Yellowknife when Kimball knocked on the door of his rented apartment above a beauty salon.
"Sir,"
Leloup said, taken completely by surprise.
"No longer in the military, no need for sir now."
He let the man in and fixed them both tea, and Kimball laid out his proposition.
"Private security company?"
Leloup said.
"Mercenaries, you mean?"
a word with pejorative connotations. We provide armed security for people who need protection.
Like who?
At the moment, I need a man like you in Sierra Leone. Do you know where that is?
The west coast of Africa. What do you need a man like me for?
The government is fighting a war against rebels who want control of the diamond fields.
The government can't do this themselves.
Their army is a little on the untrained side.
And you've been helping with the training.
Exactly. But I need someone with your particular skill set.
To track down the rebels.
And train others how to do that as well.
I like tracking bear and moose.
And living above a beauty salon? How would you like to own a cabin on Great Slave Lake, or anywhere else for that matter?
Bought with mercenary money?
Money earned legitimately in the protection of those who can't protect themselves. That was often not the case. But once Lulu signed on, it became easier and easier to ignore the gray areas of the job. And there were long periods between assignments when the money allowed him the freedom to live in the cabin he bought on Great Slave Lake, and every morning wake to the knowledge that he was embraced by one of the most beautiful wildernesses in the world, light years from the humiliations of the residential school of his youth, from the dirt of the city, from the senseless tug of war between tainted governments and equally tainted rebels and greedy cartels. But even then, walking alone in the woods that had become home to him, he heard the whisper of something more, something that kept him from the peace he thought he'd purchased. For 10 miles, he negotiates the rugged dirt track leading toward Shoal Lake. He plans to head to the house on the island first, thinking it might be the more comfortable option for refuge. Vernon Morisot cautioned him that the way to the cabin on Fox Creek is easy to miss if you aren't watching. So Lulu, as he nears the island, does just that. He spots the turnoff, two slight depressions that could be tire tracks, barely discernible between the trees. Then drives on. A couple of 100 yards shy of the bridge on Morisot's crudely drawn map, he breaks to a stop. In the dim twilight, he sees a blockade created by 2 black SUVs. Nothing is going on to the island or escaping from it. Although he can't see the man, he knows Kimball is there, can feel his presence in the same way he was able to sense a hiding enemy in the mountains of Afghanistan or the jungles of Sierra Leone or Colombia. He turns, backtracks to the cutoff for the cabin, and follows the narrow corridor through the woods to its end. He sees a light in the cabin and a Jeep Cherokee parked out front. As he approaches in his SUV, the cabin goes dark. He pulls up beside the Cherokee, kills the engine, and steps out, bringing with him his Weatherby meat eater. He walks toward the cabin, pauses, and stares at the darkened window beside the door, aware that he is being watched. He steps to the door and knocks.